all, welcome to the latest episode of Provincial State of Mind with myself, Owen Harrison, Jeff Neville and Tom Savage. This would normally be a podcast focused on all four Irish provincial sides in the URC and European competitions, but they haven't started yet, so we're going to be looking at the Rugby World Cup for the next couple of weeks, and we'll discuss that and any major off-field news. And speaking of major off-field news...
And just to go back over the notes, basically they found you and me pretty, you know, good, like not very biased at all, insightful as well. But some of the stuff they're saying about Jeff, like just biased. Oh man, like they were saying that he's like he's a wind up guy, like he's deluded. Man, just trying to wind people up.
Well, I think we've all seen that, to be honest.
I know. So we had to suspend Jeff for 1 week because he hates Leinster rugby so deeply that,
I mean, he's been trolling them directly from burner accounts and everything
for years. We are very balanced, like, and we've tried to be a good influence on Jeff, but it just
and
it
we
hasn't.
Don't condone any of his behavior. We have said that he does need to apologize for this.
And he needs to apologize. And until he apologizes, I think the people, and I think it's not just Leinster, like rugby, that he hates, it's the actual province of Leinster. Everybody who's ever lived there, like Brian Boru, he was on the other day, to some of the stuff he was saying about him. Like, I don't know. Like, we were left with no choice.
Yeah. I mean,
left with no choice.
And the stuff he said about Ronnie Drew as well was just disgraceful.
I know.
And I mean, who dislikes Ronnie Drew?
Like, I know. And like, this is before he was going on about the carbon monoxide canary as well. Obviously, a very proud Dubliner. And it's just, you know, I can't even repeat it. It's an animated bird. Like, you shouldn't be saying that stuff about those things. It's just, I don't know. I'm disappointed for Jeff that he hates Leinster so deeply, but that we had to suspend him. So it's just going to be nothing but insightful, good, like unbiased,
non-trolling,
just good, insightful stuff. That's what we're here for, and that's what you're going to get in this week. And next week we'll bring Jeff back, but he deserves. Like, I think the province of Leinster deserves an apology from Jeff just for how biased and unpleasant he's been on basically his entire career on Twitter and on this podcast. I mean, I think it's only fair enough.
I think so, and until he does that, you know. He won't be welcome back here on PISA.
No, because you know what? We cannot have that sort of bias on here. People who are like masquerading that they actually really support just one province and they're talking about the others and they're just like trying to mask that shit. That people don't buy that. They don't buy it.
No.
So
they can spot the fake straight away.
They can spot straight away. They can spot it. So look, Jeff, if you're listening to this, just apologize to the province of Leinster. Apologize to Leinster Rugby, apologize to Ross O'Carroll Kelly, Gordon Darcy, Ian, Jamie Heaslip, all of them, the tech sector. Get out there and just make those apologies.
Ronnie Drew, don't forget Ronnie Drew. That was particularly, yes,
yeah. Uncalled for. Yeah,
definitely.
There's a lot of rugby on.
Yeah, I think we should just park that there now.
Yeah, park it.
We'll park that until next week, until Jeff comes back
and answer for his sins. I think sins is actually an appropriate word. I would call it a sin, what he has done. He needs God to forgive him. So
He needs to atone for his actions.
Exactly, yeah. Atone. So like into the bridge. Buy a few creamers for the lads because they are vintage. And if he does that, I think he might be able to get back into the good books pretty easily.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's only fair.
What did you do for the weekend? I know what Jeff is doing, but what were you doing?
I was actually in God's own country in Cork.
I can see you're glowing.
I am. I got a heat stroke, sunstroke on Saturday as I was down at Children's Fight Club. The major event down in Cork on Saturday with over 2,000 children in the one venue for Fight Club.
All fighting at
which
the one
was
time.
Quite impressive. Yeah.
Battle Royale.
It was Battle Royale. No major injuries, no lives lost. And as I was telling you beforehand, we went on the bus early in the morning. And I'm very much an accountant in terms of this. We brought 35 children and we came home with 35 children. I don't care whether it's the same 35 children or not.
Who knows?
No.
Who knows?
Numbers wise, we're good.
Look, the numbers add up.
Yeah.
We have to bring back 35 children. There are 35 children on this bus.
Yeah, the parents seemed happy. No one complained about it. Well, no one got past my intern anyway.
He does have a firearm for a reason.
I like to think of myself as a bit like Lionel Messi in the States. Have you seen his personal bodyguard that runs around the edge of the pitch?
They're lucky that Lionel Messi doesn't really do much in the way of running anymore. They can just kind of stay in just a general area, just goal hang. That's what you just have to do.
That's the way I like to think of my intern. He just sort of runs around and stop people coming near me.
I've got a christening come up for my little girl this weekend, so people won't be able to see the tantalizing things that are going to be dangling in front of the camera right now. But we have little sweet jars that we are deciding to make for the kids who are going to be at this christening. And my lovely partner, my beautiful partner, has left the large boxes of jellies in the room where I'm recording this podcast. There are three. Now, you can see these, Owen. You can attest to how big these boxes are.
Yeah. To sort of go back to something from early 90s, Pulp Fiction. There's some motherfucking nice boxes.
Yep. And they're here looking at me. Now, I've been on a big lose weight kick. I've been going to a personal trainer to get myself into shape because I've got some like video stuff and I've got to look presentable.
You've been working on the arm action because you've got some serious jellies to eat.
I was not looking presentable. So I'm going to a personal trainer and this is a challenge. I have to say, looking at these, because like there was a whole lot of jelly snakes. They thankfully have been taken away from me. I don't have access to them anymore. But there are cola bottles here. There are those kind of weird kind of strawberry rings. And then there's those kind of strawberry, kind of, they're harder, kind of, basically, this is contraband. I can't be anywhere near this, but it's right here. So I'm going to have to try to use my, is that my mouth actually watering? It actually is. I've got to keep away from, I've got to just pretend they're not here and just try and move on.
I would be a serious cola bottle fiend now, I have to say.
Oh, I got your hookup right here. A whole box of these. These are the good stuff. We've been straight to the supplier for these. We aren't paying the shop price for these. We got these wholesale. And I'm going to stick up like a pick and mix empire, selling little bags on the streets. It's not illegal. It isn't illegal, as far as I'm aware.
You've got these coming in on speedboats off the West Coast. Dumping big bales of cola bottles.
I think these actually came from up north, because they've all got those, you know, the 5 cent boxes, you know, like what's this 5 cent on the top? Like that's how much they are each. Honestly, if these are all 5 cent or 5p, this says 5p. If these are all 5p, these are actually worth a pretty penny.
That's how you know inflation is not up. Gone are the days where you could go to, when I was a young child, and you go down and if you got 10 pence and you could go get the 10 penny bag with 10 individual sweets.
This is the thing. If Jeff wasn't suspended, we'd have lost them at this point, because we're talking about pence.
Yeah. Pence, yeah.
It's 10 pence, 10 shillings. 10 shillings to the hog's head. They used to pay you to take the jellies away back in the day.
Bad on that. They had the sparkler ice pops you could get for about 10 cents as well, or 10 pence as well.
Oh, like you pick up a little bit of diabetes one bit at a time.
Yeah, this is back in the days when they used to have proper cereals, things like, you know, smacks and cocoa pops and stuff like that, stuff that was literally like 90% sugar.
You're coming out and your pupils are like little pinpricks, like after your breakfast. Yeah. It's just like, I'm ready for the day. I'm ready for whatever comes here.
Crack cocaine for school going kids. Yeah. Brilliant.
And you know what? We were happy. We were happy. We were happy walking barefoot to school. We were happy
because we were matching high there. As we were running there,
sprinting. The festival of rugby has commenced. Have you enjoyed it?
I have, actually, more so than I thought I would. Overall, it seems to be better to watch it from home than to be actually over there. Based on the
it's too hot. One, I love the weather has broken today. The last week has been miserable for me. I was just like, clouds. Maybe I'll put on a jumper. Yeah, that'd be nice. Wouldn't that be nice? But like, you look at the crowd issues and the heat. I'm miserable. Miserable looking at that. But you know what? It'll be great to be out there. The one thing that was the biggest letdown for me, and I know a lot of people have been talking about this, the children singing, the choirs. I don't want to hear no kids singing at a rugby game. I don't care if it's a choir. I don't care. I don't want to hear that children of the corn stuff. Don't want to hear it. Like, I was there waiting on Friday night. I had a big day Friday. For the Marseillaise. I was waiting on Friday. I had a big day Friday. I was waiting, coming home. Home in time for the Marseillaise. That's what I want to hear for. And you've got, like, God Save New Zealand. It's like a rubbish anthem. But you've got, like, the Marseillaise. And next thing I'm hearing the choir thing for God Save New Zealand. And it's like, that's interesting. I really hope they don't have that for the Marseillaise. And then they do, but you know what, disappointingly, they didn't have it for the Haka. They should have had them doing it for the Haka too. But
the whole thing, it sounded like someone had actually stuck a pig with a knife.
Yeah.
It was that bad. Squealing out of it, it was off. The different key changes in it, whatever it was, the harmonies they were trying to do, it was out of sync.
It was like white noise for the atmosphere in the stadium. On the TV anyway. I'm not sure what it was like live, but on the TV, you could hear the choir. You could hear the players kind of singing off key and kind of wondering, oh shit, we're ever getting ahead. Now we're behind. Like, no wonder France conceded, like straight off the kickoff nearly, because their heads are all over the place after Le Marseillaise. But then I was thinking, that's only for the opening night. Okay, because, you know, they have all these weird things. At the opening ceremony. So maybe it was just for the opening, you know, maybe it was just for that. Next thing anyway, we're subjected to Ireland's call by a children's choir. It's like, oh no.
Like, to be fair, I heard that and I thought to myself and went, was the Rosa Tralee really that bad?
Like, I preferred the Celtic mysticism version of Ireland's call that they play for the under-20s, which they basically have the same CD and they've got this weird electric guitar at the start of it. I would prefer that. And look, no disrespect to the kids. I know they've had a hard life. I've heard they're disadvantaged kids or something like that, but I'm just like, okay, look, that's fair enough, but it still sucks. Like, regardless of, you know, whatever else, and look at it, it's unfair. I think they were put into an unfair position. Seriously, like, I think somebody thought, oh, wouldn't it be brilliant if the children, who are our future, by the way, were to sing the national anthems ahead of every single game in the tournament? Wouldn't that be moving?
It'd be brilliant, but you just don't have to give them a microphone.
There, they can still be there, but just take the mic away.
They can sing along with, they can sing along with the crowd. They can sing along with the crowd. Just keep them back from the players a bit. Let the players sing. Let the crowd sing.
Because I think, what was his name? There was a guy, he's a commentator. I think is it Nick Heath or someone like that, was in the stadium for South Africa versus Scotland. And he was there before all the crowd came in. And they were rehearsing Flower of Scotland with the choir. And it was actually lovely, but it was like, just kind of really eerie with them just singing at the choirs. It's like, this is kind of really spooky, a real spooky vibe it's got going on here. But like The Conjuring or something. It was like, this is a weird vibe for the World Cup. But I think it could work, but just not the way they've done it. I think they are actually changing it ahead of round two, because I think most people were just disappointed that, you know, Stade de France, the opening of the World Cup, that you don't hear the Marseillaise. You're just like, nah.
The last I had heard on that was that they had, what was it, World Rugby had decided it is up, they won't take an executive decision to ditch the children. So they have left it up to each individual union to make the choice whether they want the original version of, the good version, we'll call it, of their national anthem, or whether they want the kids singing along. So basically, it's now up to each of the individual unions to go along and say, no thanks, kids, we think you're shit.
Thanks, no thanks. Yeah. Thanks, but no thanks. Here are some pick and mix that can supply them. I can supply the tournament. I can be an official vendor. And you know what? Look, I know it's a big thing for the kids, and they were probably really excited about it. But it's just it doesn't work for the tournament. I think it makes it a lesser product on TV. Because I think, you know, who wouldn't have loved a big match like Flower of Scotland and the South African South African anthem, which I really like as well. They would have been brilliant with, like, even just play the music, let the crowd sing. That would have been better for me. It basically, look, instead of having a small choir with just children, how about turning the entire stadium into a big choir and have them sing along to the music? Wouldn't that be better? See, everybody's happy. You're making the choir a bit bigger. That's all you're doing.
Just take away their microphone. Right, we better get on to some actual rugby here. We'll start with the Ireland game on Saturday afternoon. Ireland won 82-8, but not after only after Romania took a bit of a surprise lead.
I was very amused by that, I have to say. That was straight away,
Rog,
I was thinking
Rog having a little kick like that in one of his last, was it his last ever game in Murrayfield?
I think something
like
that.
He did the little dink like that, and everyone was like, get him fucking get off him that off. Pitch.
I remember thinking, I'm going to text Owen right now, and I'm going to text him Namibia 2007. But I didn't. Because Ireland scored, I think, on the next possession.
Yeah. Look, I mean, to be fair, look, I think it would have been, we would have been checking the betting patterns if Romania had won this.
Yes.
That's how bad things were. There was no chance of them winning this.
Not really. I mean, look, I mean, the gap between them, between Ireland, like, I mean, 82-8 is a, and like, the thing is, Ireland should have won by more. Like, it was a huge win. Ireland could have won that game any way they wanted, really. They were, like, there was no way for Romania to win that game. In no facet of the game were they even anywhere close to stopping Ireland from scoring on every other possession. And as they tired, Ireland nearly were scoring on every other possession. And I think it was a really good performance from Ireland in that regard, in that they weren't dragged down to Romania's level, which I mean as respectfully as possible, because like for them, like Romania 100% will be better for having played Ireland, Scotland, South Africa. They'll be better after the World Cup, and maybe the guys to come will be better for it. But they're nowhere near Ireland's level. And Ireland never once in the second half took the foot off the pedal, which I think is a really good thing.
Yeah, I think for me, it was a solid Ireland performance, taking into account the opposition. The good thing is that it's rare that Ireland have go and continue to keep that foot down and sort of blow into the 60, 70, 80 point margins. That doesn't always happen. The performances themselves, there was a couple of good things there. The one worry, again, is the set piece for me. It was... there was three, four lineouts that were just went awry.
Four,
you know,
total.
Four.
Two were stolen. One was a crooked throw, and the other one was an overthrow.
And that's been a consistent theme, I would say, in the last sort of 6 to 8 weeks with Ireland. Certainly in the build up, they haven't got the lineout.
I have done some homework.
I love this, Tom.
I've done some homework. And now, admittedly, it was for my own site. But I'm going to repurpose it for here. Ireland, over the last calendar year, before the England game, the warm-up, had a return at the lineout of around 87.8% completion at the lineout, which is good. It's a decent number. Especially if you count it over a calendar year. There's lots to like about that number. In that time, Ireland have thrown to the front of the lineout 40% of the time. The test average in the same period is 38.1. So Ireland carry, or they throw to the front of the lineout a little bit more than average. They throw to the middle of the lineout a little bit less than average. And they throw to the tail and go quickly at the line out quite a bit less than the average. So Ireland's line out over the last year or so, even to the Six Nations, it's really based on simplicity. Ireland maul more than any team in the world in the last year. I think I've said it on either this podcast or one of the other many podcasts that we've been on. Like, that's not something when you think about Ireland that you associate with Ireland, that they maul more than anybody else. But they do. And that comes from the lineout. Now, Ireland get a lot of lineouts. What do you think is the average number of lineouts that there are in modern game per game? Both for both teams?
Well, for both sides. Within a game, I'd say around 25.
Exactly 25. So when you look at the average, you know, when you break it down half and half, I mean, it'll never be half and half, but you're talking around 12 lineouts per game on average, most teams will have. Ireland have way more than that usually. So you were saying there about the four lineouts that were missed against Romania. For me, they aren't massively important because Ireland still had eight lineouts to play off. Now, against a team like Romania, who Ireland could have beaten if they were running at 10% at the lineout, it doesn't matter. But against Tonga, against South Africa, against Scotland, the completion rate needs to go up. And I think what Ireland, the reason why Ireland were losing the lineouts that they were losing in this game and against England and against Samoa is that for the last three games, Ireland have been throwing way more to the middle than what they have been doing in the previous year. Now, is that a tweak that they're Paul O'Connell's after making? So, like, Ireland mostly maul from the front. Again, you throw to the front because it's easier to throw to the front. Like, it's the ball has to travel a shorter distance. You're less likely to have somebody competing at the front of the lineout. Throwing to the middle has risks because the opposition, typically, they will have a lock jumping, lifted by another lock, with generally their blindside flanker or your half lock or whatever you want to call them, in the middle. That's typically what they would do on a five-man lift or a five-man lineout. So that's the worry and the danger of throwing to the middle is that it's easier for the opposition to compete because all they have to do is jump. You have to disguise the jump. So if you look at the lineouts that Ireland lost in this game, where were they all to? The middle and to the tail. And that seems to be a tweak that Ireland have brought in this year or in the new season, we'll say. And I think that goes some way to explaining why the lineout was so poor against England, around 84%. Against Samoa, it was 76%. Against Romania, it was 67%. Now, didn't cost a win. Ireland still won all three of those games. But that's the worry, is that when it comes to South Africa or even Tonga this coming weekend, that if they can limit Ireland's lineouts while also affecting Ireland's ability to complete at the lineout, things get sticky very quickly. Because again, look, if you have 19 lineouts and you run at 80%, that's still a lot of lineouts that you can launch off. So you're losing a few, but like the number looks bad, but it's not actually bad. I think that's the big thing for me on top of like maybe a few unfamiliar combinations is that it seems that we've changed our targeting and we're being a little bit more expansive because I think maybe we want to maul more. We want to have a better cut off the Springboks. If we can maul from the middle or launch off the middle as opposed to going from the front and then launching off. It's an interesting one. I think it is because it's not something we associate with Ireland. Lineouts normally mean like incredibly reliable, but it's something of an issue in the warm-ups and in this game as well. And Tonga have a lot of size, so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
I think some really good information in that. I wonder if it's something, as you said, that they've tried to change because they know the line-out will be so analysed going into the World Cup that they're going to have to create a variation on that. Now, whether they use it or not against that, but against someone, the other one is that against someone like the box, if you throw to the front and the box suddenly take their heavy carriers, they can push you and have the power to push you back in towards the touchline, because which, like, limits again what you can do.
Ireland do not have the biggest pack. Like, Ireland don't have a monster pack. Like, we have a big physical pack for sure, but not the heaviest pack in this tournament by a long way. Giving up a lot of size to the Springboks. We'll be giving up a lot of size to Tonga as well. But what we've done really well at the set piece is that a lot of the stuff happens before the opposition is ready for it. Do you know, like, we maul feint an awful lot. Like, our what was it? The most amount of mauls in the world at test level this season. But a lot of those are maul feints, where it looks like a maul, but it's a breakaway. Like, you'll often see Josh van der Fleer mauling, but he's coming up with the ball and he's passing the ball away. To do that, we need a line-out platform. And I think if we're passing, or if we're throwing more to the middle, that changes our maul build. It's more high risk, especially against the Springboks, who have a lot of size, and they'll have no trouble throwing up two pods into the air to try and, you know, get the likes of Etzebeth or John Klein or RG Snaiman or, you know, Franco Mostert or Peter Steptoe. They've got size everywhere. So, like, it's a high risk. If we are going to go majority to the, we were majority to the front, but if we are going to move to the majority to the middle, like the Springboks do, because they have the size to do that, it's a bit of a gamble, and it could explain why the lineout's been so off, because we are doing things differently.
I think the other thing is that we've seen, and it's something that sort of, when I watched the game back, the other one is, we're not using Joe McCarthy as a jumper at all.
No, he's being used mainly as a lifter. I think, because he did carry the ball an awful lot, was that an exercise in kind of minding his calories? So basically, Ireland wanted him to be carrying the ball more, and they didn't want to be, you know, because again, jumping is fairly exhausting. They didn't want to overuse him in that role, maybe. But I don't think you can go into the Springboks game with a non-jumping member of your back five, especially if Josh van der Fleer is playing, because then you have two who aren't jumping. So that's an interesting one. I think how they go will be, and how they choose to use him, if they do choose to use him, will be really interesting.
Yeah. Because, like, he had some excellent work. He played a very good game. He had some excellent work in the defensively in the line out. He was able to get in amongst the Romanian Maul D. He was able to get in there and disrupt it. His carrying was very good. He had a few rough moments. I think he's obviously still learning himself, you know. There was a few errors in there. But look, it's still very raw. Mm. But I mean, like, the potential is there. But as you say, I think if you have a second row that's not going to jump, then you have potentially an issue whereby it's a lot easier to mark the line out and know where it's going, getting opposition pods up, etc.
Do you think that they might look at it and go, if we start Joe McCarthy, which I think it should be a possibility, whether it is or not, I don't know. I don't think you can then also start Josh van der Fleer. I think that if you start Joe McCarthy, you can't start Josh van der Fleer.
And I think the Romania game points to that. Is that what they were trying to do?
Yeah.
That you can put McCarthy in there in the second row, but to do that, you have to accommodate it. You have to move Peter O'Mahony to seven, and you have to put someone like Byrne or Baird at six to give you that extra line out option.
Yeah, no, I think it's because I like Joe McCarthy as a player. I think he's got really good physicality. He's a hard runner. He's a big guy for 22. He's got a big frame. So, like, I think if they can get him into the team, because, like, I haven't been overly enthused by what I've seen from Ian Henderson this season, and from what I've seen him in this international season, the warm ups and in this game, he was okay. But look, most people will look okay at the very minimum against Romania. I feel that Joe McCarthy is playing really well, has a lot of physicality. Impact is impacting offensively as well. I think if you can get him into a back five, we'll say Byrne, Ryan next to him, we thought did really well against Romania as well. Omani, Doris. And like, it's not that, the thing is, like, people who will, like, people will assume that I'm Jeff and that I'm biased against Leinster rugby players when I'm saying that I don't think Josh van der Veer should start in that build. Okay. This is not what I'm trying to say. And I'm not Jeff. Okay. I love all provinces equally. Equally. But for me, it's about your build as a player and your role. What do you do? What do you do when you're playing at your best? And against the Springboks, I think you need to have five legit jumpers in the lineout. I think you have to have that to make it easier and to make things simpler at the lineout, offensively and defensively. But if you want to get the power in there of McCarthy, who I think is a more impactful power player at the moment than Henderson, we must have four lineout specialists or four lineout jumpers in the back five. If they wanted to have McCarthy as a lifter or as the odd front jumper, fair enough. But I don't think you can carry Josh van der Veer in that back five if you choose to start McCarthy. If McCarthy is going to continue not to be a regular jumper, you can't also have van der Veer who doesn't jump either. So to me, I would balance the line out by starting Omani in that back row. Whatever number you want to put in this back, start him at number 8 for all I give a shit. But that's what I would do to balance it out in that scenario. Because I think that gives you power, gives you impact. I think that would be the right way to go, I think. If they're going to go down that route, I think that you must start Omani in that back row. But we will see what they do.
No, I also think the fact that Conan hasn't been or isn't available for the first two games brings that more into play, because when you've only got four real back rows in your 33-man squad, you continue to have to play them. But you're now being forced, you only have three of them. So the three of them have to play both opening games. So you have to move it in. You don't get the chance to sort of experiment on it. So they're using the sort of the half lock. So you're going to see Baird or Byrne at six probably again for the Tonga match. And then you're going to have to replace that in the second row. So it depends whether, as you say, they honestly believe McCarthy has the ability to play that game against the Springboks, or whether Farrell decides, okay, I have the trust, I have the in Ian Henderson, that he's a Lions player, he's, you know, seasoned international, Ulster captain, this is the guy that can come in, he has done it for me in the past, regardless of form, I'm going to stick with him.
I see him starting Henderson in this game against Tonga. I think he'll start him. I don't think they'll risk Ty Byrne as well. I don't think they'll risk both. I don't think they'll risk all three of their senior centrally contracted locks or half locks or whatever in this game. I think they'll go with Omani, van der Veer and Doris in the back row. I think they'll start Henderson and Ryan as well. That's just my reading it. I just feel.
Yes. Yeah. The only thing about that is you're there, and if you go with that back row, that's there. Your only fit back rowers going into the Springbok game, and that's a big risk as well.
My worry. It's like, I think that Andy Farrell's Ireland have one way they know how to play at their very best, and that's the Ireland team that we all know. Like, if they don't play that team, if they rotate, performances and results fluctuate. I think that they'll be, with the South Africa game on the line, I think the pressure is on. And I think that when the pressure is on with this Ireland team, they go to full strength more often than not. And I think that we might see a bit of rotation on the bench, but that's what I see happening. Just because of the need to keep momentum going.
Well, I would agree with you. I think this is going to be a fairly stacked Ireland team. How stacked, I don't know.
Would you start Porter for this? I think you have to.
I don't know if I do. Because part of me says you put him on the bench. And part of me says, you try and get minutes into the guy who's going to come on for 10 minutes against the Bucks. Because if Porto goes down, and like, I'm thinking worst case scenario, you like, is Porto going to do a full 80 against the Bucks? That'd be my question.
Jesus, I see him doing 70 minutes plus anyway, because there's 2 weeks off after.
Yeah.
So they may well do 70 minutes plus.
Right. How important is it to get, if it's the last 10 minutes of the game, right, to get experience and get minutes into the guy underneath that and again, find out who, like, that is?
That Springboks game back in November of last year was in the balance in the last 10 minutes.
Mm.
Like, this is a vital game. Like, beyond vital. Like, not to be disrespectful to Scotland or anything here, but like, if we presume, like, over the last 4 years, Ireland have beaten Scotland more or less every time. If that holds, right, whoever wins this game against the Springboks is more than likely going to be playing New Zealand, who aren't in the best state at the moment, I would say. Still dangerous, of course, but the loser will then be playing France in Paris in a knockout game in the World Cup, a home World Cup. Daunting. So for Ireland, this Irish team, I think, has played better when they've had the same team week after week after week. They don't really do rotation. Like, they don't have depth options the way, like, we'll say France would or South Africa do or whatever else. They have a very specific jigsaw with very detailed pieces that fit together in a certain way. And if those pieces aren't there, the picture's all fucked up. So with Tonga coming and the big physical challenge that they're going to face, I think that they'll look at that and go, that game is a landmine. Because if we're not careful, because Tonga had an off week last week. They've been gunning for this game for months. If we're not careful there, Andy Farrell is thinking, play like brothers out the... Yeah, and on top of thinking that, he's also thinking, they could catch us here. If we go in there too rotated, because they're big, they're physical, the weather's supposed to be cat for this game as well. So that will also play a part. I think you look at that Samoa game and go, the weather's supposed to be brutal against a big Tongan team. They've got a lot of size in that team.
What's the tight head's name?
Tamofuina, is it?
Tamofuina, yeah. That's a considerably large human.
Like, you look at some of the guys who they've brought into their squad, like, just a couple of guys who've become re-eligible for Tonga in the last year or so. Like, we know about Malachi Fekitoa coming back in, but like, the squad they have there, they've got Sam Luisi, who we'll know from the Scarlets. They've got Sione Vailanu from Glasgow, big, powerful runner. Ve Fifita from the Scarlets as well, a massive athlete, just an unbelievable talent. Steve Maffey, at one point one of the highest paid players in the world. They've got Adam Coleman, former Wallaby Lock, is after declaring for Tonga as well. This guy is 6'8", you know, 125 kg. They have got a lot of size in their front row as well. Like, if this turns in, if the weather is as bad as predicted for this, like, that's got like a that like that that Samoa game, but with even bigger guys, and that can get ugly, I suppose, pretty quickly.
Like, if you take it like that, if they have a decent scrum with size behind it, and it's a bad night, that means more likely of knock-ons, more likely more scrums.
More scrums.
Right? That in itself is energy sapping. Then you're getting into the situation whereby you're trying to fix the line out. Now, whether, as you say, that's by design or by shape or just by...
Either way, it's not working fully.
Yeah, exactly. If you take away those two platforms, then what Ireland are totally reliant on is their kicking game to get them into a situation where handling becomes harder. And that's what they would have to rely on to get their platform going. We saw against Samoa, that was difficult to do.
So does that mean that you must start Sexton in this game?
Well, I think you almost go as strong as you can, or as strong as you feel you have to. I think we could see maybe between 10 and 12 of the guys that will face the box starting against this Tonga
Yeah,
team?
I think they have to start Kelleher, because with Sheehan, like, and I don't see him risking Sheehan for this. I think they'll start Kelleher alongside Porter, because that's probably our strongest loosehead scrummaging combination. I think loosehead hooker scrummaging, like, I think that's the best one from a scrummaging perspective. Probably have to start Furlong.
Yeah, I think he needs the game time.
Yeah, and then you're looking at, might as well do the first choice back five if you're going to do that. You might as well, like.
Yeah. And then
if your kicking game is hugely important, you have to go with Sexton. Murray as well.
I think you probably maybe start Murray in this for the kicking. And then you, I think for me, you either double down with Crowley and say, okay, we're going to give Crowley and he's going to be the backup to Sexton, or you start Sexton and let him go for 60
I think
minutes.
You start Sexton and maybe go with Ross Byrne on the bench then.
I suppose the question is, why would you go with Ross Byrne? And I don't mean that in a sort of a disrespectful way, but if you have backed Crowley for the first game and Crowley, you've decided, you know, are you just giving, like, are you giving them each a bit of time in the hope that you decide who's going to be the backup for Scotland, or do you have it already? I would have thought you pick a player and you stick with him to get him as the backup.
I think they won't go through this World Cup without using all of the guys that they brought. I don't think Andy Farrell would do that. I think that to keep a happy camp going during the World Cup, I think you have to use all of them. And I think that he'll have Ross Byrne on the bench for this game as a result. Because that basically...
I understand the logic for it.
Yeah. That's what I see him doing. But we'd have to wait and see, obviously, and I'm just putting this out of my ass, really. But, like, I think looking at the way that he's done things typically, I don't think he'll leave anybody that he selected without an appearance. And there might not be the opportunity to do that there won't be against the Springboks, and there won't be against Scotland, because that's also a very, very dangerous game as well. So that's what I kind of see myself, but you have to wait and see, because I think that the more I think about this game, the more of a landmine it seems, because, like, the weather, I'm just looking here, like, it's meant to be really bad rain. Yeah, it's going to be warm, but it's almost certainly going to lash rain. Scattered thunderstorms is the weather for Saturday for this game.
Lovely.
So what does that mean? It means a lot of scrums. It means a lot of kicking. It means a lot of draining physical sequences against a much bigger pack. And they'll have a fairly explosive midfield and outside back line as well, who haven't been playing great together. Let's be clear. But the weather would be a massive leveler if the weather turns out to be as they've predicted.
Yeah. And moving on to some of the other games, the Box had a convincing win over Scotland.
I think they could have won by more if they had a goal kicker. Livock didn't have a great game off the tee, to be fair. But
no.
I think he's a good playmaker. I think if they had somebody like Melvin Jaminet or a goal kicking scrum half, John Cooney, Livock would be an easy selection for them, because I think he suits what they're trying to do now. But the goal kicking is a concern for the Springboks, I think, because they left a number of points on the tee that in a tighter game might have been very costly.
There was a lovely stat put out by Russ Petty on Twitter there, where it was the average meters carried by South Africa for the last 3 years. So average meters carried in each game. So 2021, it was 289 meters. 2022 was 382 meters. And this year, it's 532 meters carried.
They've been tweaking their approach for a while. They've been moving away
and
from
part of that pressure. Is Pollock, Pollard, being injured, I think, and they're moving away to be.
You're thinking of fish again, all.
I am. It's always about the fish with me, isn't it?
The thing is, I think they want or would like Pollard for this goal kicking, because in at his best, it's you know, elite level. But stylistically, with their rest of their game, I'm not sure if he massively suits what they do or what they're trying to do. Because I think Libok, whatever about his goal kicking, he's got good spatial awareness. He's a decent passer of the ball. He's like more than a decent passer of the ball. He's agile. He's explosive. He's quick. Lots of things to like. And he, you know, when you combine him with the likes of Willemsaar, with, you know, Willy Leroux or some of the other guys they have there, I think it actually works really well. He's a 10 who seems to have a great relationship with his wingers. And he seems to be really adept at finding them. And they've got quick little guys out there. So they had way too much for Scotland. Scotland, physically.
What impressed me most was the Springbok defence. How easily really they shut down. They got the shooters up into the passing lanes. They cut out the options for Finn Russell and those. And they were able to shut them down. And part of that, I think, was because they were winning the game line. So when you're winning the game line, you're constantly on the front foot. It stops the opposition having quick ball. You're able to get up there. The shooters were coming out on the front foot, ability to shut it down, get wide, and stop Scotland. Scotland struggled to get to the edges and beyond and around that Springbok defence. I think Ireland are going to face the same problems. But I do think Ireland will have a better chance of meeting them on the game line and trying to get some sort of parity there. That's the only thing that may happen.
At the same time, I'm not sure we're radically bigger than Scotland physically. I thought that Scotland actually did really well. I thought Schumann had a great game for them, Pierre Schumann. And I think they lacked a little bit of size in their back row overall. But like you said, their Springboks defense was imposing. They looked very impressive. And I think they underscored how good they were. I think that like they could have won that game 25, 30 points, and it wouldn't have been an unfair reflection of their dominance. And they're only going to be getting bigger and more powerful. Now, there's a bit of an injury risk at the moment to Malcolm Marks. He got injured in training today. He's going for a scan, but they're looking fairly imposing at the moment. And that's going to be, I'd say, one of the games of this last 4-year cycle, that Ireland versus Springboks game coming up in Paris. That is going to be one of the games of this cycle, I think. It's built up. Yeah. Two really, really good teams, both with kind of clashing sort of philosophies to a certain extent, where the Springboks have changed theirs from heavy kick pressure to now being a more high possession or on ball team. Ireland being a team that kicks as much as anybody, way more than the Springboks at the moment on average per game. But when they can stretch an opposition, just wear you out to make you run lengths of the pitch and horizontal, up and down, north, south. That's going to be the game of the tournament, I feel. Of the pool stages, I think it's set up to be an absolute humdinger of a game. So looking forward to that.
And the result will be very important because of the result on Friday night in the opening game between New Zealand and France, where France got the win. So the winner of the Ireland Springbok pool game is likely to face the All Blacks in the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
Now, to me, the opening game, it really showed up New Zealand's weakness, which is in the front five.
Yeah.
They just couldn't get the go forward, the platform that they needed there.
They don't have the horses at the moment, I think.
Yeah. I think that's the best way.
You've Sam Whitelock there, who's a legend of the game, but I think physically, not at the races at the moment, not at the elite level. A great player, all time great player, but I think they need more power. I think that they've got to be starting. Samisoni Tuukiaho, I think, has to start for them more regularly now. They need, but like they've tried to bring in size and power, But against France, it just felt that it was only a matter of time, really. Even when they took the lead, like, it was all based on the parts where they can, the opposition are standing still and they know where they're going to be. The All Blacks were able to play around them, hit their targets. They're very accurate. They're very, like, they're an incredibly skilled team. But when that only really counted when they were able to basically, okay, it's a set piece. We know where everybody's going to be standing. We can play around them. When it came to phase play, I felt that they didn't have the power to be able to compete like for like. So everything had to be super accurate and super complicated. And France were basically just able to pin them in, because France has been playing heavy kick pressure for a couple of years now. They brought in Sean Edwards specifically to allow them to play that game. They put the ball into the in behind the 10-meter line of the All Blacks and basically said to them, play. And they forced errors out of them. They used to, they have a big, heavy scrum. They hit hard in defense. And they don't take any risks in possession, do France. So it's a, I think it was a really good example of France using their size and power and tactical discipline to beat France, or to beat the All Blacks. And I think, again, didn't need to be as maybe difficult as it looked at times. I felt that France were by far the more superior team.
Yeah, just come back to what you said there. To me, the All Blacks at times looked like a real Joe Schmidt team. It was True. It was coaching and playing by numbers. It was almost like PlayStation. You know, yes. It was like, I want you to move here, and then you move to this side, and then three phases later, you're going to be standing in exactly this spot, and if you're 2 yards away from that, I'm going to bollock you out of it in the review type thing. And that's fine when everything goes to plan. But in the sort of chaos of multi-phase rugby and what, you know, as it goes on, they can't adapt, because the coach can't coach that, almost, to a degree, and it falls down. They're really good. I thought France played brilliant cup rugby. As you say, kick the ball in, put it into places that you don't want to play out from, and force them to do it, because the All Blacks kicking game wasn't good enough. And I thought France put themselves in the right situation. They took the points when they were on offer. They chipped away at it and they got the win. And in a way, it was very similar to the England-Argentina game. England are at a spot, I think, where, and I've seen
Argentina and others. Bad.
Well, I think in a way they were made to look bad. But I mean, like, yeah, they really did shit the bed on it. Like, they really did. It was bad. England looked bad in the build-up. But, and I've seen Squidge Rugby and a couple of others talk about this. I think a lot of that was down to Borthwick, and particularly Allied Waters and those. They're going through a conditioning phase. They're trying to get them to do something. They were not fully fit in the warm-ups. They're not where their conditioning was meant to peak. I think that will continue to get better as they go through the games of the pool stages. Their biggest problem is, I think England can play cup rugby. They can play pressure rugby. They have the players between Ford and Farrell to play a solid kicking game, knock the points over. The problem is, can they expand their attacking play enough to be a threat against the bigger teams?
It feels like they're where the Springboks were in ahead of 2019, where they've stumbled on the game plan they want to play, which is heavy kick pressure, big focus on their defense, and then taking the opportunities that come their way. I think they're lacking the game breakers at the moment, where it's, you can piece up a poor Argentina team who looked like shit in this game. But when they start taking on a team who can maybe match them physically in the way that Argentina could not, and maybe a team who's capable of scoring tries without, like, relentlessly knocking on like Argentina were, it'll come back on England. But can you score tries in return? And that'll be the thing. I think they'll make a semi-final, though.
That's the scary thing, is
they're the side of the right side of the draw is what it is. Like, if they get to a quarter final, like, do I think they could beat Australia or Wales in a one-off? Yeah, probably. Because both those teams are quite flawed.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think it'd be something else to see the two of those in a potentially in a semi-final. Given particularly where they were pre-tournament. The All Blacks, I think they're the team that you're, well, both Ireland and the Box will want to face the All Blacks. Number one, because I think they're better suited to beating them. And number two, I think who the hell wants to play France at home in a quarterfinal when they're starting potentially to build momentum? It's one of the worst draws. So that makes that a big game. The other one then was
Wales Fiji.
Yeah, a bit of a controversial game. Certainly when it comes to the referee.
They've been talking about this for days and the aftermath of it. Look, I don't think Matthew Carley had a great game. I think players, coaches, they have bad games. Referees have bad games too. I think Matthew Carley maybe got a bit flustered in this game. And, you know, I think probably regretted not carding Wales and then overcompensated by carding Fiji. Like in that sequence that everybody's talking about. But at the same time, did Fiji deserve a card for that? Yes.
Totally.
I think the problem was that Wales deserved maybe more in the defensive sequence that came before it as well. So it's tough.
Yeah.
And who'd be a ref?
It is. Look, yeah, no matter what you do as a ref, you're going to get called out by someone, you know? And I think for me, there was a build-up of Welsh penalties. And yeah, he probably should have gone to his car. But the Fijian one was like, it was a rolling ball going at some speed and was just taken out. It could easily have been a penalty try as well.
And fair enough.
As the yellow card, you wouldn't be complaining about that either, you know?
Yeah, I think it was only an issue because of the cards that weren't given before that I think were justified.
Yeah.
But look, I think it doesn't really take away from what was an outstanding game that Fiji still should have won.
Oh, it's...
Like, thing is...
It the knock-on at the end, it was like, if he had actually given the shorter pass, the unders
short,
pass...
There was a short ball there.
He was in under the posts.
And it would have been, what a finish. It was so exciting. Like, I think that you look at, well, Semi Randradra, he's going to finish that in the corner. And then for it to just squirm out of his hands, just a sickener. But Fiji are really good. I like Wales as well. I thought they were really gritty. They played with real, like, they look like back to being a tough team to beat in the way they weren't under Pivac.
I think the only thing I would say about that is I think Wales have maybe 16, 17 players. I don't think they have a full bench that they can bring off that will continue it on. And I think that's going to be the one that's going to impact them going forward. So next week we have Ireland against the Box. Who are we going for in that one, Tom?
Well, it's Ireland and Tonga this weekend.
Or sorry, Ireland Tonga.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ireland, but I have a feeling it could be a bit of a sticky one. I'm going to go with Ireland by 10 points, given the weather.
Ireland by 10. The two other games that might be some way close then on that. On Sunday, we have Australia-Fiji.
I'm going to go with Australia in that one.
I'm going to go Australia
by 5.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Australia by about one score. And the last one that I think might be close would be England-Japan.
England will win that by 15, 20 points, I think.
Yeah, I think England by, 10 points plus. As well.
Japan are not your granddaddy's Japan.
They're not the Eddie Jones Japan.
They're not even the Japan that they were 4 years ago. They're a different Japan.
They're bordering on zebra type disrespect.
No disrespect to Japan or zebra or Leinster rugby.
Or Leinster rugby. We'll round it up there, folks. Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings and for supporting the podcast. Please do rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen, as it really helps. And also be sure to share the podcast on social media. Hope you have a good weekend, and possibly Jeff might be back to join the two of us next week. Talk soon.